This is Native Voices United Radio, the radio station with the Indigenous perspective.
We want to welcome you to Native Voices United. We're doing a daytime show because I'm always saying tonight, but we want to welcome you today to Native Voices United. And our special guest that is with us today, Chief Sachem Larry Fisher Jr. is here. We want to welcome you and tell us a little about your tribe and where it's located.
Wonderful. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Did you want to? We're going to start with a prayer, but we're introducing you to the show here, and then Bruce, do you want to go ahead and start with the prayer?
Need the long of Mawak, the Quak Renap, Bellwak, Makto Damnish Nabe. Hotuma say Nick Anishik Elamelion Gutnapo, Anishik Elamelion Wamma Mil to Wakano, along with Wamma Longo Mati, Wolumless Wakin, Wak Meets Wakin, Wak Nawikian. Hotuma say Nick Ritsumoyan, Kiha Kawich Canero. Ni Luna Bum Sina Itch Wapeaning Shachkanai Lapi Anishik Elamelia and Wamamil to Wakanol Wak Ni Luna Mbamasa Wakanak Anishik. I say thank you for introduce myself, and then I said thank you for this day and for all the gifts like our families, our good health, our food, our homes. And I asked the Creator if he could, or she could, be with us at this time as we're trying to walk a true road, a straight road. And I thank the Creator again for this day and for all of our lives. Anishik.
Anishik, Bruce, for the prayer. So today we have a special guest with us right from the East Coast. And, you know, I want everyone to take notice. This young man has everything together. He doesn't have all the answers, but he has it together. This is Chief Sachem Larry L. Fisher, Jr. Welcome to the show.
Kudabatamish, thank you for having me today. And kudabatamish to you, Bruce, for your words of prayer this morning and starting this day off to be a collective one for us all who are in the same direction. So thank you to you all. Thank you. And I'll greet you all in my language of the Massachusetts language, a language that is known for the Commonwealth state of Massachusetts in which it bears its name. So I greet you in my language. Akune wunikisak nitasuis wampamikun nitasuis wampatak nitamas marikisit nitamas potirika masachusiak kurabari mash nitampuags and nikan tamwi. Welcome to this time to meet. I should thank you. Hello, my name is Wampanoag, which is a name that was given to me by the Pocasset chief, Darryl Black Eagle Jameson, when I was about 17 years old. And the name, it represents white feather. It represents the tail, the eagle's tail, the bald eagle's white tail. He often used to say to me all the time, he would say, you know, the bald eagle, he has no flight or direction without his tail. So no matter how great of a bird he is, as long as he doesn't have his tail, which is his direction and represents his leadership, he has no way to get to where he needs to go or to tackle what he needs to tackle. So they said, your name represents the leadership. And it's funny because I grew into that name, and today I do represent the leadership for the Mattakesic tribe, which is a local tribe here in Massachusetts, in the region of southeastern Massachusetts. We are the Mattakesic Massachusetts. We're a band of the Massachusetts Indian Nation. Most folks don't know that the Commonwealth State of Massachusetts got its name from our nation. We were one of the first contact families and people who were contacted by the Mayflower family, who arrived in 1620, coming from England to the Netherlands and then to our shores here. Most people today only know of the Wampanoag people, but we are Massachusetts people, and the Commonwealth bears its name from the native people which were first contacted.
So
thank you for having me.
Can you tell us? We are just really happy to have you here on our show and working with us in the broader aspect of Indigenous human rights. Can you tell us what exactly you have special that's coming out here soon? I know there's a new book. Can you tell us the name of that book?
Yeah, sure. I do have a new book that's coming out. I'm very excited about it. The book is called Tribal Plasticity. For those who don't know what plasticity is, I'm kind of a biology nerd, and I often relate the world of biology to the way that our lives as Indigenous peoples are shaped, whether it's through our traditional ways of life, through our medicine, or through just the way that we're adaptable to society and all of its evolution. But plasticity, the reason I named it tribal plasticity was because in biology, plasticity means the adaptability of an organism that changes along with its environment or its habitat. And, you know, we often have this unique ability to either be easily shaped or molded, or always fitting in with the evolution of conformity. So I talk a lot about in the book what that means for us as tribal people. But the subtitle of the book is an exploration into the realities between the recognized and the unrecognized tribes here in the United States.
I'm going to, just in case any of the listeners out there, I'm going to upload the pictures to Native Voice of United of the book that that will be out here soon. And we will also do a booklet on this book, because I think it's, you know, very worthy of staying at the top of my list of books that I need to delve into. So I'm looking forward to the book being released. And as soon as it's released, we want to share that on Native Voices United in our book blog as well, and also post that, you know, all over the internet. I want people to be able to get this book, pick it up, read it, and understand exactly what you're explaining to us about your community and the politics of things that are going on the East Coast. Do you have freedom to speak to us about anything that's going on with your tribe?
Yeah, and I just wanted to piggyback to just to get into a little bit of that, of the book that is coming out. I guess, you know, in this book, you'll get a chance to learn more about the one is the Massachusetts Enfranchisement Act of 1861, which was an amendment to the Massachusetts Constitution, and I explore the narrative of how the power of self-government is given to the people, which in turn ends up restricting the government's interference on certain individual rights. I look at some of the, I get into an in-depth exploration of the mechanisms used in the UN's declaration. We go a lot through the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the cultural sensitivities and insensitivities of the petitioning processes for tribes, and mainly my focus is more so on the northeastern tribes and their inabilities and inadequacies of the BIA to really, with cultural competence, establish real relationships or government-to-government relationships based on the lack of these cultural sensitivities for petitioning criteria. And then at the end of it, you know, we'll talk more about how the United States has, how the U.S.'s unrecognized tribes have faced many issues that will affect their way of living and continuing to exist. And I do a deep delve into, you know, how the entities, these unrecognized entities or nations are abandoned around our, even during a natural resource, even during a national issue where they lack national resources. And the case study of that is being the COVID-19 pandemic. So it's a really interesting piece of work. I'm very, very excited about it. And I hope that this helps to illuminate and amplify the voices of these unrecognized tribal governments that, that in fact still do exist and are here today with us.
So. I remember Chief Kanikanik, and some of you may remember him. He used to come on our show back years ago. And Chief Kanikanik talked about the unrecognized tribes being the real government that is not moving ahead with sovereignty. So now that there are groups now that, you know, can trace back their ancestry and they will tell you who they are, where they come from, and there's no denying that they're Indian people. So, and I remember years ago, where before federal recognition was such a great big deal in Indian country, before all of the tribes were, you know, signing under federal recognition, this was, you know, during the time frame when the tribes just existed, you know, without, you know, all these different federal recognition names and state recognition. They were just there. Do you understand what I'm saying? And they lasted from, you know, colonial times, prior to colonial times, because they were here upon contact, and they're still here today. And, you know, there are people out here that would love to erase, you know, the original people of the East Coast, but it's not happening. I'm telling you that right now. It's just not going to happen. There's too many of us that love who we are as Indigenous peoples, and we love our communities, and we care about the broader communities that we're attached to. I mean, there's love there. It's there. So when we look at these issues that we're facing in Indian country, anti-blackness being one of them, and we look at, you know, many of the non-federal tribes or the non-status Indians, per se, and we see the conditions, the health disparities that our people are suffering under. What do you think would be something that all of us could do, the ones who want to support the future of the next generations coming up on the East Coast, what do you think we could all do together to help during these hard times with one another? What can we do? Is there something possible that you have even thought of yourself that could happen to uplift the people?
I think it's a very broad question. I think there's many ways to answer that question, but I also think that it takes many voices at the table to answer it. I will start by just simply saying, at the very least, meaningful consultation must take place, even amongst each other. You know, even amongst each other. You know, I know that we often ask for meaningful consultation with state agencies, companies, etc. But we also have to have meaningful consultation amongst one another, and really understand each other's stories all over again. And we have to do that without reservation. We have to do that without preconceived notions or judgments of what the stories are. But we need to listen, you know, and also just ask Creator to continue to guide us to understand and to also receive warmly that information. But I think that it's a much deeper question. And it's going to take some, it's going to continue to take some thought. But unity is the first step. We must begin to come together, recognize each other first, and to work with each other, whether we're, you know, FedRec or not, it doesn't matter. I believe that Native people are Native people. And again, it's not about all the time, like, just nations. You know, I often say this. It's not just about tribal nations all the time and the political body of those nations. We have to break it down to its simplest form, and that simplest form comes right back to families. You know, when I see you and I see, you know, other communities, I look at them as families because I know that my nation is made up of the families. It's the family's stories. It's the family's ways. It's the family's traditions, their cultures, the way that they interact with one another. And that's what makes it most important about who we are. It's those families. And it's as simple as that, you know. So I think we have to look at things, not complicate things as the world has asked us to do, because society has complicated. Here we are as Indian people today trying to catch up to that. I don't think that that's the answer. I think the answer is really reducing it to its lowest common form, which the answer there is, you know, what about these families?
Yes, and it you know, Bruce has said this before, when many of these families have come under attack, he has said, this is about family, and we have to acknowledge our family members. And, you know, there can be no more gatekeepers stopping that acknowledgement with each other.
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you something, you know, I've been really privy, and I'll get into a little bit about my tribe and where we're coming from and what our story is. But just before I do that, I'd like to just say I've been privy to spend time in Indian country, you know, as a young man, and grow and evolve with Indian country. I've been ousted, you know, because I'm a young man and I have darker skin, you know, and I'm trying to do something positive, you know. But what I will say is that in Indian country here in the Northeast, you know, it's really been challenging to build those unity relationships, you know, for many different. And we've got to take a step back, you know, and just look at each other's stories, back to family again. We've got to take a look at everyone's stories, listen to what happened. And we all have to understand that we're all victims of the same exact oppressive algorithm, you know. So for us to deny one or a community, you know, it's very much so, as we already know, it's an act of perpetuated genocide against our own self. And that is the biggest that is not, you know, reported as a statistical data analysis for suicide amongst Native people. We kill each other mentally, emotionally, and spiritually when we do that. And that right there is one of the biggest importance. But because it's one of the biggest importance, There's no reason to, you know, to enumerate it or use it as an analysis. There's no reason to do it, you know, because that's the goal. The goal is for us to kill each other off, fight each other off of existence, you know. But I've learned, you know, that we have to listen to each other's stories, because my story was like that. And I even remember, you know, being in Indian country growing up and trying to fit in with the so-called popular communities that were around. And the reason why I did that was because I had an identity crisis. I mean, I was taken from my family. I was placed into foster homes. And they put me in 28 foster homes that were right in Plymouth County, right where my tribe's traditional heritage. And I didn't even know. You know, that's how bad the framework
for subjugation and colonization and oppression was against the American Indian people in Massachusetts. You know, I didn't even know. You know, and but I remember when I walked into the circle, my uncle brought me back into the world, you know, of Indian country. I was like doing all that I could, you know. I remember, like, I even remember straightening my hair, like, you know, with a blow dryer, you know what I mean, to try to fit in with these other natives. I remember having to feel like I needed to drape myself in wampum earrings and necklaces, you know, and I remember trying to, you know, fit in with this Indian accent. You know, I remember all of that stuff when I was growing up, just simply trying to find where I fit in at, not realizing that simply being myself was the true Indian, was the true story, because colonization is a big factor, you know, and identity theft is a big factor in Indian country in Massachusetts, you know. So I finally learned over time that it wasn't about the popularity, but it was about family, and it was about honesty, and it was about truth, and it was about, you know, what's going on here, you know, and how do I help to bring hope back into someone else where I remember feeling hopeless from. I don't want them to feel the same way. I don't want my community members feeling that way. What can I do to just change that opportunity, just at least for one person, you know? But Indian country was growing up here. It was rough, you know. I was popular, you know, when I was just this Indian boy running around the powwow trails, singing on the drum, dancing, and I didn't really fully know who I was, and I didn't come into my role as leadership. You know, everybody liked me then, but the minute I had something real to tell, and I had something real to preserve, and I had something real to revitalize, that was when the arrows came pointing my direction, you know? And it's still an algorithm in which I'm trying to figure out the solution for, but also just trying to understand the problem, you know, really trying to understand the problem. And the only problem that I see there is, like, self-hate, you know? And that's a lateral kind of a violence that we've carried transgenerationally, you know? Because we're still ashamed to really be Indian people. And I think that others who are to show that, you know, they support you being just a simple Indian man or an Indian woman, you know, it makes something feel uncomfortable about their own self. And so that reflects that laterals and projects back onto you, and it creates this this trauma that's not really talked about. And it's a different kind of trauma. It's not really... It's based on and framework from a transgenerational trauma, but it's not, it doesn't seem to be a trauma that is just specifically transgenerational. It's a new kind of trauma, and I'm trying to observe that to my best ability anyways. But that's something that I wanted to highlight. It's very important to talk about that and to be honest about that, you know, and to be honest about it. I see people going through these stages of trying to fit in and trying to discredit other Indians, I do know where they're coming from. They're trying to find a place, because that place where they're really comfortable at was taken from them, and it was lost from them. So I understand it, but it is not acceptable. It's not acceptable in Indian country. It's not acceptable to do harm and do more hurt to our own family, because we just, in turn, we hurt ourselves. You know, because we are the same reflection as our brothers and sisters from other communities who are struggling.
You're so right about it being unacceptable, because it's just not acceptable to hurt your family. And if we, you know, consider ourselves to be who we say we are, then we have to look at our family and deal with our family in a different way. And right now, I see the mindset of the people are ready to change and flip the script. And on our show before, you know, we had a brother that talked to us about the pendulum swinging in the other direction. and with how things are going right now. And he said, you best believe it's going to swing and it's going to change and it's going to be different. And I can see that already starting. And the movement, the minds of the people and the younger people are starting to change and come into the realization of who they are as Indigenous people here on Turtle Island. So I'm looking forward to the future. I'm investing in the future by just giving back to the communities and the children so that we can have a better future for our people. I think that's the main goal here with the things that I'm doing, because I'm looking at the future for the children who are coming up, the grandchildren and the nieces and the great nephews and things like that. I'm looking at them. Where do they fit in, you know, in our communities? Are they going to be lost to assimilation, or are we going to call them back to the circle and to the ceremonies in our big houses? And that's one of the most important things for me, thinking into the future. What am I going to do to change the scene with our family? And that's one of the reasons why I asked you that question. What can we do to uplift? And that's one of the things that, for me, that's the educational aspect of bringing the children into understanding who they are, the rightful heirs and descendants. So I'm looking at that now, and I'm seeing where you're coming from, too. You're coming from approaching it in a way of healing, and that is for the future as well. And when you're healing something, you're restoring it. And when you're healing the broken culture and the ties that have been broken over the years, that means that people have to be educated, because with the education comes the healing, because you come into the knowledge of self, and with the knowledge of self, you come into the knowledge of your people. So, you know, it's just something that has to happen. And there's so many that, you know, like you mentioned when you were a teenager and when you were on the powwow scene and you're drumming and everybody liked you at that time, the moment that you stepped away and you were talking sovereignty and different things like that, the scenery changed for you as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it changed 100%. It changed. I mean, I had folks who would give me hugs and would shake my hand and would smile and want to sit on the drum with me and be calling me before grand entry started. Like, hey, bro, you coming, man? I hope you're going to be at Powell. I hope to see you this weekend, you know, and all of those same exact people, you know, have done a complete 360, you know, have turned when I came out to revitalize my group. And the first thing that I was hit with was, you know, you're a self-appointed chief. And, you know, I thought long and hard about that, even though I was supported by my clan family, which was our clan grandparents, you know, which were my grandmother, my grandmother's sisters, which are our clan mothers,
mm-hmm.
you know, my great aunties, you know, and they supported me and they wanted me to do this. And really, they made it so I didn't have a choice but to do this work, because they were the ones who helped to guide me through, because this was such an issue for them. And they just didn't have the resources mm-hmm. or, you know, the ability to even know where to start, because they had no formal education in what Indian country looked like or what tribal politics looked like. And I did. I grew up on the Powwow Trail. I grew up in, you know, different communities. I worked for the Tachi Yokut tribe for a little bit. I did, like, different things, you know. I worked as a chaplain, an assistant chaplain underneath the chaplain for the Native American Spiritual Council of California. I worked in the women's prison there, running ceremony. You know, I did a lot of different things, and they didn't have that experience. So, you know, initially they just said, you know what, you have what it takes, you know, to save this family, you know, and to try to
yeah.
gain back what was taken from us. And so I stepped up to the plate and I did it. But, you know, I want to say something. In regards
yeah.
to the whole self-appointed chief thing, you know, I get shots at me all the time, you know, with that. And I'm just going to say it like this. I asked myself, if I had to self-appoint myself as a chief, what is wrong with that? If I had to, even though I didn't, in the sense of what people are trying to make it out to be, I say to myself, what is wrong with somebody trying to save their community and stepping up to the plate on their own to do so? And let me say it like this. You know, when you see something wrong, you step up. When somebody, a person of color, is getting abused or harassed by the police, you self-appoint yourself, right, to take out your phone camera and you record. And in the process of you recording that, that's used as evidence to save somebody's life and to make national changes in the world. And that is a critical intervention to preservation, to life, to vitality. So when we talk about this whole self-appointed chief thing, I look at it from a different perspective today, and I say, damn it, somebody wants to step up to take care of their family and to lead their community when nobody else is going to do it, and it's at risk of dying and never existing again, then kudos to that person for stepping up and self-appointing themselves in a leadership role, because it's not an easy job. That title of chief, you know, I tell my friends and my family, I'm like, look, I'm just another dude just like you are. You know, just because I have that title, so what? I don't even want the title half the time. You know, and, you know, Bruce and I were talking, you know, and he said to me, is that, you know, you never say that. You know, you always, you honor that. You honor the position that you have. But it's been, it's created a lot of beauty in my life. And it's really opened a lot of opportunities to help my family members in our tribe grow and evolve. But it's also, you know, caused a whole lot of trauma for me too. And that's because of the lateral violence in which I faced that was inflicted upon me because I stepped into this role to try to save the lives of people whose lives were mainly taken. And I tried to give a little vitality of life back to them, you know, but it's caused a lot of trauma along the way. I missed opportunities to raise my children the way that I wanted to, you know, but this is like the best way to raise them in a sense, because giving them something that they can really have that really makes their lives easier later around the emotional trauma, the mental trauma, the spiritual trauma, you know. But I wanted to touch on that because I hear that stuff that goes around, and it's almost made, it was created, the whole self-appointed, you're a self-appointed chief, that whole term and the wording around that was almost created as a strategic roadblock so that perpetuated genocide of these communities continues to exist, you know, and I want to be real clear about that. It's very important that we step up and step into our leadership capacity to take care of the things that we can and we have control over to take care of. Don't allow for people to say, oh, you're a self-appointed chief, to stop you from preserving your identity and your family's history. That's your most precious natural resource is your history, your identity, your culture, your language. And your family, I mean, that's precious, you know? So I think I really want to break the ice on that. You know, so kudos to those families and those people who step into their leadership role, you know, and they stand proud and they say, no, this is my family, this is my tribe, this is who we are. You know, it's an honorable mention. It's a real honorable thing to do. It's not, you know, it should not be taken lightly.
I agree with you 100%. And Bruce had a comment that he wanted to make.
Well, I introduced myself in this morning in the prayer, and I said, Nida Shinzi Lilano. And Lilano means leader. And for a long time in my life, I wouldn't accept my title. I wouldn't even say I'd introduce myself, but I would never ever say what my name meant for fear that people are going to say, who does he think he is? Do you think he's better than us, or do you think he's extra special, or what? And I was named when I was a baby by my grandmother. And, you know, it wasn't a name that I chose. It was a name that was given to me. And living up to those expectations, you know, when you have those roles, you know, it takes a courageous thing to do, because, like Cedric was talking about, you have to take the arrows and the bullets right now. You have to take that hit. You know, they're going to come. I was taught that, you know, everything works in balance. And the more good you're going to do, the more bad you're going to see. Because life has to stay in balance. So for us, when we put those positive energies out, we have to realize that there's also a negative balance that's natural to creation. So we have to understand that. And that's what we see in these people that are attacking us and making claims and calling names and, you know, that negativity that is in their lives, not because they're negative people, it's because they've lived lives that have created problems for them, created confusion in the way that what is right, the values that are right. So for me, I'm always looking for this young guy. You know, I'm always wondering, you know, I'm getting older now, not that old, you know, I'm 50 years old, but or almost 50, eh? But for me, I'm wondering, where are these young kids coming from? When are they gonna come along? And the reality is, we don't teach our kids this history. We don't teach the kids these things that happened to tribes like you, to nations like you, to the things that are happening to you right now. Like those types of things, we don't teach our kids. And we have to be able to talk about those things and use it as a badge of honor, you know, that we can pass on, that we need to find these kids that are going to be able to take over when we're gone, that they're going to pick up the things that we're putting down right now for them. So for me, I'm thinking all of this unity stuff that seems to be coming from this group that's against C-Pain, that they even that C-Pain is a new word. But what I'm getting at is we really need to have a focus on this unity. It needs to be more than just getting recognition of state or federal, not that that's what we're after, but the fact that we don't need anybody to recognize us but ourselves. And I think that's what we need to teach our youth. We need to really educate them on the language and on the culture and on more or less on the values. And on top of that, they need to walk their understanding of their family back. They need to understand. My teacher said, if you want to understand something, walk it back to creation. Walk it back to the time when we were created. So we have to walk our history back, you know, the last 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, 500 years, and understand what happened to us. And our kids don't know that because our schools don't teach them that. So I think we need to have, like, conferences and workshops and things that are focus on education, that focus on teaching our youth to be proud, to be courageous. Because right now is the time that we need those young ones to understand what's going on. Because this is a critical time. There's a lot of unity coming here, and it's a historical thing that we're meeting each other right across the East Coast. So the Creator has planned this perfectly for us, and we're just walking the road. If we can stay on our road, we can stay true to that unity and that movement that's going to happen. Not that can happen, that's going to. It's already going to happen. And we know that. Otherwise, we wouldn't take the bullets. We wouldn't take the arrows. We believe that it's going to happen. And that's why I keep working. And that's what I hear in your voice. And, you know, I'm really hoping, maybe you can tell us about some of the educational stuff you do with your youth. You told me about a herring run the other night. And, you know, those are the types of things that we need to do. And coordinate with each other so that our youth can meet each other and understand each other. Anyway, I'm starting to ramble.
No, but this is good. We need to hear this.
Go ahead. I want to hear about what you're doing with the youth over there, if you're doing anything.
Yeah, we are. Thank you so much for your words, Bruce. You know, again, we're always put in this very challenging position. Being one, we're not a state recognized tribe because the Commonwealth State of Massachusetts does not have a formal petitioning criteria for tribes to meet or to petition to the Commonwealth State to become recognized as a state tribe. Basically, all of the tribes that are listed on the website of the Commonwealth State of Massachusetts, they are friends and grandfathered in with the Commissioner of Indian Affairs. Our issue with my tribe, Bruce, around education is that we have to create it for ourselves. There is an opportunity for our tribal members to go to school, our young people to go and get college tuition waivers, as that is a benefit that is enjoyed when a tribe is acknowledged by our state government here. But unfortunately, in my case, our commissioner on Indian Affairs happens to be from one of the tribes that you probably see my tribe quarreling with a little bit in the news and in the national media. He's from the tribe is currently trying to build their casino on a portion of our reservation land, which was deeded to us back in 1664, and it was considered a perpetuity deed. So we're fighting long and we're fighting hard with zero resources, really, just the faith in Creator that we know that He wants us to continue to try to live upon that land and to be on that land and to continue to be good stewards of the land. So we're just trying to do the right thing so that we don't disappoint the Creator. And that's really it for us, you know, but it's really cut into our opportunities for education. But one thing it hasn't cut into, Bruce, is that it has not cut into the opportunity to educate our children culturally. Recently, we did have a herring run. We're not a federally recognized tribe. We're not a state recognized tribe. There are signs up, though, within our tribe's jurisdiction, according to the original deed from 1664, where the state puts up signs that says you're not allowed to take herring. Recently, they put up a sign that says that if you are a card-carrying Indian, can you believe it? If you're a card-carrying Indian, you can take herring. You're with the exception. So we have cards, too. They're just not, you know, from wherever other people might want them to be from, but we have our own tribal cards because we're a tribal government and we have the right to self-determine the way that we politically issue our laws and our governmental ways to our tribal members. So recently we had our tribal heron run ceremony, and unfortunately we were met there by the tribe that we are having some challenges with. And they did. They said a lot of nasty things to our children. And our children were about 5, 7, 10 years old. They said a lot of nasty things, the adults from this other tribe. They said a lot of nasty things to our tribal children who were out there learning their traditional ways of how to catch herring. And some of them were doing this for the first time ever in their whole lives back on their tribal land. They traveled far, too. We had tribal members that came from Atlanta who had moved out there, you know, that came in and you know, and we had women out there. We had our tribal women out there, you know, but our men stepped up and they protected our children and our women, and they made it possible. And it ended up being a beautiful, beautiful ceremony. We brought our fish back to where our burial grounds were, and we were able to teach them some of the traditional ways that were taught to us, how to conduct the ceremony, you know. And like I always tell people, when you lose so much, don't worry about it. You know, that doesn't mean that you're not Indian. Remember, being Indian is also about continuing to do things in the traditional way that you want to do them. Even if you don't have one elder that's left in your community, but you want to revitalize those efforts, you're now the elder. So that means that you have to create those ceremonies and then pass those on to your generation, because that's what those traditions become. How do you think they did it? They did the same thing one day. And that's how those traditions were passed down. You know, like, people get really discouraged a lot, you know, but I spoke loudly to our tribal children and said, look, I said, you are all are the cultural moderators. When you breathe Matakesic. When you cry, your tears are Matakesic. When you sing, your songs are Matakesic. When you pray, your prayers are Matakesic. So that means that you're the cultural moderator to re-envision what you want this culture to look like, even though a lot of it's been taken from us. And don't be ashamed that you're at the point where you have to do that. Take that as an honor. We ask our children, take that as an honor, that you were a part of the implementation of cultural revitalization and preservation. Because you do something, and that Creator gives you the mindset to do it, and the spirit to do it with, and the good way about yourself to do it with that good way, it becomes Matakesic law. It becomes tribal law. And that becomes the traditions of our people because you did it and you are a Matakesic person. So I had to explain that, Bruce, and it was deep. But it was an amazing lesson that was learned, and it instilled them to feel like they were really part of the tribe and that they weren't coming into a tribe that they had no idea. You know, I said, no, look, we're all learning this shit together. Nobody's going to be left out in this process. I want to learn from you all. You teach me what I need to do for you and how you want me to represent Matakesic to the world. You know, so I really engaged the tribal children to be the cultural moderators and the real preservation officers of our nation. And so that's been beautiful, you know. And we have other members from different communities. We had a young lady who's a best friend of mine from the Shinnecock Indian Nation. She came down a couple of ceremonies ago, and she taught our young people songs. This year, it was beautiful. They went back to the water's edge, and they sung that song together. I was just blown away. I was like, wow, you know? They're hungry. They're hungry for this cultural knowledge, and it's our job to do whatever we have to do to preserve that, you know, and get them to understand their responsibility as cultural moderators of their own culture.
One of the things that my teacher told me was, he said that as long as you enter with a good heart and a good mind, that you can't do anything wrong. You can make mistakes and learn from them, but you can't do anything wrong. And I one of the things with that is, you know, we were attacked over here for our big house, having our big house here and conducting big house ceremony and sharing it with some of the families on the East Coast. And then they started big houses, and they actually started before we did. But I've been accused of trying to be the one that's out there selling this culture. And, you know, one of the things that there's no gatekeepers to culture is what my teacher taught me. One of my teachers said, what is that that there is between a tarp, 16 poles, and 12 rocks and a fire? The relationship between you and those things is your relationship. It's not anybody else's, you know, because I was worried about what are people going to say when I start running a sweat? You know, they're going to tell me it's wrong and I don't know how to do it and all this. And they said, that's not anybody's business. But your own, how you choose to celebrate and give thanks for life, that's your choice. And the things that we practiced in our culture, you know, I was waiting for this big list of, you know, the 10 or 100 commandments, you know, that were for Lenape people. And it doesn't really exist other than our four laws of kindness, honesty, respect, and sharing. And, you know, I was taught that those are the things that we're trying to move forward with. You know, we always do that with everything we meet in creation. It's impossible to do, but we strive to do it. But in saying that, our culture is all common sense. When you get into the big house and you look at the mass and you look around at the 12 mass, you can see creation. And that's all it is a tool to explain how we live life and how we're related to the creation. So the stuff you're doing with your kids is awesome. The things that you're telling them, because they need to have pride. But I think one of the things that I want our youth to know is that they need to know why they don't have these things anymore. And that's part of the reason. The residential schools, the banning of the language, the racism, the all the different things, taking Indians as slaves, you know, the warring, the massacres, the conversions to Christianity, all those things that have taken place in our legacy. Our kids need to understand that in a real simple way so that they can understand that, hey, we can get this back, because everything is that we need to learn is still out there in creation. We want to learn about families. You can go look at the rabbits. If you want to go, or if you want to learn about taking a lifelong partner, you can go look at the rabbits. You want to go look at taking care of your babies, you can go look at the geese and watch the geese take care of their babies. You want to know about working together, you can go look at the bees and the ants. There's so many things out there, teachings out there in creation that we that are still there. It's not lost. And it's not hidden under a rock. It's right in front of us. We just have to be able to see it and use our common sense to say, well, this applies to my responsibility to my community, my responsibility to my family, and my responsibility to myself. You know, that's all we need to do is have them good morals and walk the best that we can down our straightest road that we can. We're going to swerve back and forth off the road here and there, but we have to try and keep our focus. And that's what our kids need to understand, that our nation is still walking forward. Our people are still walking forward. All that crap that happened to us, they're still calling us, we're still calling ourselves Lenape. You're still calling yourself your tribal name. You know, those things are awesome. And that's what the kids need to understand, that just being able to call ourselves that is an awesome thing, because you're honoring that heritage and that worldview that we had with creation. So I'm rambling again, so I'm going to let you
know. No, but what you're saying is true. And we are the ones taking those steps. And like Bruce said, we're doing this together. We're moving forward together. And at this point that we're at now, you know, it's starting to solidify, and we're talking more with each other. We're sharing more of our stories, and we're the ones that are picking up, tracing things, organizing, trying to help the elders, trying to help the youth, trying to do for everybody in the community. And we need all of us working together for this, not just a few people, because it will burn the little few people out. We have to pick up the pieces. We have to give back. Yes. And we're looking for other families that, you know, we haven't talked to yet. We're asking them to, we want their voices to be heard at the table. You understand what I'm saying, brother?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'm thankful that you all, you know, because I didn't make the popular vote, you know, we often don't get an opportunity to have our voice heard. So I just want to say, you know, again, Adamish, to you all for that, for giving me an opportunity, you know, to speak a little bit. And to get into the issue, I know you asked me a little earlier about, did you ask me about what's going on with our tribe's land?
Yeah.
So to get into that, I mentioned just briefly that we have a deed, which is considered an Aboriginal title, and a lot of people in Indian country are not used to the term Aboriginal title. It is a legal term in the United States, and it's a term that's used when a tribe had relationships and a deed that predated the U.S. Constitution. So we see today that a lot of tribes had actual treaties with the United States. Our tribe was a little bit before that. We had treaties with the Crown. And Plymouth Colony Court was one of the first courts of competent jurisdiction before the United States was the United States of America. And because of that, that's where our tribe's land deed was, or our title to land was reaffirmed about four or five times in a court of jurisdiction. And at the time, the Plymouth Colony Court was representing the King of England. So that's what makes this a treaty style issue when you talk about our land deed case. And it is a case. I say case because that's the way it's heading. We are Indian people. We have every right to continue to exist and to live upon the Titicaca Indian Reservation. Today, the Titicaca Indian Reservation encompasses about four or five different towns, one being Taunton, which was called Cohasset, or Conahasset back in the day. And it's a portion of Taunton, Massachusetts. It's a it's all of Bridgewater. It's from the center of town, 6 miles out, going north, south, east, and west. And that was in document number 23, a part of the original deed, to show that upon the incorporation of the town of Bridgewater, that the Indians were not to be molested or estranged from their homeland. So these things were all deeded to us in a language, in a word that's used as perpetuity. And it was interesting because what people fail to realize is that the Northeast Indian country families were some of the first families in the whole country to really start to develop Indian law on a national level. Because the mm-hmm. first time you see a restrictive covenant deed that is basically setting up the perpetuity of jurisdiction for an Indian tribe is right here in Massachusetts. And that started with Josiah Swampatuck, who was my relative and ancestor. He created that deed, and it said in the deed, even if an Indian is to estrange or to do away or convey any of the traditional lands, that they would forfeit their rights in the tribe and that they would be removed from the community as such. And that the land could never be passed on from an Indian to a white man. It would be void. It would be null and void. All of that was written inside the deed. It was very specific. And I'm so proud to actually be from the lineage and to be from the tribe of someone who made history like that. It was such an important aspect. Yeah. And that's really an important factor on an academic scale to this deed of land. But anyway, so lately we've been, you know, exercising more tribal jurisdiction. I have contacted the Office of Tribal Justice at the Department of Justice, and I keep them abreast on every move we make. I say to them, look, you know, we're going to exercise jurisdiction here, you know, and that's just the way it is. I'm very transparent. I know that we're not doing anything that's illegal or doing anything that's against any laws, and definitely not against Mattakesett law, more importantly. So, you know, we do exactly what we need to do and what Creator has set out for us to do since the time immemorial. And we've recently put up a sign about 4 months ago that showed, you know, this place should not be desecrated as it's our burial site. We didn't specifically write that it's our burial site just for protections of our graves. But we basically mm-hmm. just said it's the same site. Please respect the place when you come here. No littering, no drug use, because they go down to our reservation lands and they drink, they party, they fish. You know, they don't reciprocate back into our waters, unfortunately. They just take, you know, and dog shit all over our burial grounds down there. You know, it's really horrible. And so we put up a sign that just said, look, you know, you're entering Mattakesett tribal jurisdiction. Please respect this place. Leave it as you came, you know, and also practice social distancing, et cetera. So just recently, the Bridgewater Conservation Commission, who is managing, with quotations, 28 acres of a portion of the land. And the reason why this part of our traditional land and our reservation land is so important to us is because in 1972, Dr. Maurice Robbins, he did an unlawful excavation. And he unearthed several remains of Mattakesett families. And he gave those remains to the Harvard Peabody Museum. And the museum, because we were not up and running and not out loud as a community, and we weren't federally recognized, you know, they gave those remains to the community that was out loud and that had more resources. And unfortunately, a lot of our members were buried in the wrong place. They were buried in some other tribe's community when really if you took from there, you know, why not bury them right back in the same place again? You know, what was the strategy behind that? And that's something that we're still investigating ongoing. But, you know, they've unearthed over 8,000 artifacts, you know, from that site. And that's a special site for us. Our family lived there. My fifth great grandfather, Richard Gundaway, was the last one to fight in court and actually beat a lawyer by the name of Elkanah Leonard in 1972. I can't remember the date. Maybe it was 1972. But anyways, he beat this lawyer out. This lawyer tried to create a pretend deed. And you can find that in the Acts and Resolves section at the State House in the library. He tried to beat my ancestor out of his land. And the judge ruled. The judge said, no, this is actually a perpetuity deed set aside for the Indian people. And you can't do nothing about it. And so the land's going to remain. And they actually said that the guy, Elkanah Leonard, who was the attorney at the time, he filed to be non-compos, which means he filed to be insane because he said never in his life as an attorney would he ever have thought that he would have been beaten out by a savage Indian on that day. And he was beaten out by an honorable Indian. And that was my fifth great grandfather. So the fight continues. Hereditarily, I've taken the seat and been positioned into the seat by my grand elders. And I continue to fight for that. So recently they took down our sign. It's been up for 4 months. They took it down. You know, we're currently building a brand new one up there again. And our attorneys have said to them several times, look, if you don't like it, you know, take the tribe to court. And one of the things they don't want to do, especially since the McGirt versus Oklahoma case, is take us to court.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Supreme Court has now ruled that. Yeah, and they've ruled that, you know, towns and states can no longer rule with the rule of the strong, but it has to be ruled upon with the rule of the law. And I think that that's something they're afraid of since we've seen lately the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of American Indian tribes. And whether we have federal recognition or not, our tribe does have federal consultation through the 106 Section 106 review process with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the U.S. Department of Commerce. We do. We've been consulted on specific projects that because we were able to submit to the federal government an amount of documentary pieces of evidence to substantiate our jurisdiction as a Native American entity and tribal nation. And so they've honored that. They've done investigative research. And so they do consult with us when there's issues going on. But again, even in the consultation process, it's very finicky. They only consult with you, you know, to the bare end of the project, you know. And I often say, you know, consultation does not mean consent. You know, let's be very clear about that. Consultation doesn't mean consent, you know. But we've got Deb Holland in there. She is very strong in the area of tribal consultation, which is a good thing. But, you know, I encourage tribes that are not federally recognized, remember who you are. Remember you're a nation. Remember your responsibility if you're a tribal leader. Act as such. And don't allow for these limitations of designations, whether you're federally acknowledged or state acknowledged, stop you, because it's very clear. Our tribal court is very comprehensive in the state of Massachusetts, and especially around the Indian child welfare. We work very closely with the Department of Children and Families, and they recognize our tribe as a live tribal court that can adjudicate tribal welfare issues in our court system. I was able to challenge jurisdiction against the state, and they tried to come at me with the same stuff as well. Oh, are you a federally recognized? You know, and I try to explain to them that they're pretty much breaching a very thin line of human rights violations when they ask that question because of all of the new adoptions of even the American Declaration, not specifically the UN Declaration because it's non-binding, but the American Declaration is binding because the United States does follow human rights law and they can be held accountable for human rights violations, not international, participate in the ICCJ. But, you know, there's just so many new mechanisms that are out there to support. But again, remember who you are and step into your greatness of who you are and believe that the ancestors, they're really amongst you and they're really walking with you and they will guide you and lead you to where the Creator wants his people to be. Because it's not a selfish act. I step outside of my position and then I give my life to the Creator and Creator just guides me and says, son, I want you to do this for the community. And I listen, I observe, and I welcome it warmly, and then I implement, you know. So there's opportunities. But I will say, in the very near future, if the Bridgewater Conservation Commission continues to work to remove us off of our traditional lands, we will be calling to action for Native people and people who are true allies to come and join us to stand our ground. We say Iotash in our language, which means to stand as firm as possible in our beliefs, in our religious beliefs, especially because of it's our burial sites and it's sacred to us. You know, so I will say that at some point we will be asking, and hopefully it doesn't have to go that far, but if anything, we may be asking for support of presence to stand with us,
yeah,
as Mattakese people to protect what belongs to us.
And we definitely will be helping and standing with you guys. One of the things that really just makes me so happy is how well everyone is coming together. And it's really happening. There are so many leaders that are ready to get moving, especially with real sovereignty. And I mentioned Chief Kanikinik, he's passed on now, but he used to call me and talk for hours about the corporation versus the original de jure government of Turtle Island. He used to talk to me about that all the time. And he made me understand. He put my mind in the frame set of, you know, Canada's, you know, laws and U.S. laws. You don't have to belong to their corporation. You can do as you want to. And the only reason that we're held up right now is because we're following somebody else, and we're instead of doing our own. And we've let, you know, someone else sit in those shoes for far too long. And none of those people should be dictating who is the quote unquote real Indigenous people or real Indian of a certain area or whatnot. It's just, we're just tired of it. And there's a new way to implement what we want. And that is, you know, taking back from the old ways and no longer following the corporation mindset of, you know, having to stand up to be, like you mentioned earlier, you know, straightening your hair and all these different things, no longer to have to stand in the shoes of the Hollywood Indian and actually pick up what we need to do as ourselves.
Are you sitting in my hair
ourselves.
Right here? I was straightening my hair. My hair is already straight. That's how sick this
right.
You know, this ideology. That's how sick this is. You know, and what the sickness is. That's how deep it runs. You know, of identity issues. You know, but let me be clear for the record. You know, I'm not a person who says or tries to dictate to other tribal nations whether or not they need to take the federally recognized route or not. I have a different perspective, I think, than most. I say, you know, if federal recognition works for you and your community, and that's something that you need to garnish resources, and that's the support that you need, by all means, you do that, you know, and you do the best that you can, because I understand what it's like as well to have your back against the wall without resources. So I've been in both shoes. I've been at the end of saying, no, you know what? Forget it. We're going to petition for Fed Rec. And I've also been on the end that I've said, we'll never, ever touch federal recognition because it will play a significant role on stagnating our true sovereignty, right? So I get it from both perspectives. So I don't have any issues, just for the record, with anyone that decides that they want to be, you know, go federal recognition or not federal recognition. You are the tribal leader and you make the decision for yourself and you're a community and you make that decision as a collective community, which way is going to be best as far as being able to simply take care of the babies. Because this is, for me, it's all about those babies. It's about those little children that are running around. It's about those little smiling faces that, you know, they get a chance to have something, you know, for their people. You know what I mean? And So I'm not against, you know, tribes that want to become federal recognized, you know, and I'm not against tribes that don't want to be recognized. I say tribes should be able to make those choices. They have the right to self-determine what their political stance should be, needs to be, and what works best for them in any sense. But I was contacted a couple years ago by Walter Echohawk, who said, in front of all of these other federally recognized tribes at the University of Columbia, he had me stand up and he said, you know, our young brother here from the Mattakesa tribe, he retains sovereignty because they're not federally recognized. And I didn't even know at the time that federally recognized tribes were looking to find new ways. I didn't know. I had no idea. I was completely clueless to this. I had no idea that they were trying to look for different ways and different avenues to retain their true sovereignty. You know, because they have been federally recognized for so long, I just assumed that they were happy in that role. You know, so I didn't really know, but it did appear that there were many tribes that are already federally recognized that were trying to figure out how to undo that contractual relationship with the federal government, maybe because, you know, maybe lands or things and the agreements or the MOUs just weren't, they weren't comfortable for those tribal nations, you know. But again, I write a lot about it in my book. I talk a little bit about, you know, the great things that federal recognition has brought to a lot of the communities and being able to advance themselves. And then I also talk about some of the issues that some tribes do face when they become federally recognized. And then what are the challenges, you know? So I talk a little bit about both. I give a well-balanced insight to both of those worlds. So that's just my stance on that.
And I think it's an open-minded perspective on federal recognition versus standing in your own sovereignty as a non-federally recognized tribe. So now, when do you expect the new book to be released? What are we looking at? What kind of time frame?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm trying to find out, too. No, really. I sent the book. Are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, sorry. I thought I heard something. Okay. So I recently sent the book to my editor for the last edits. I just did my last edits, and I sent them back to my editor, and now he's doing all of my last little bit of edits. And I just reached out to a Native-owned publishing company. So I wrote to them, and so we're in a conversation about hopefully getting this specific book published with a Native American-owned and operated publishing company to support our tribe in that sense. So, you know, and to support them as well. So, anyways, and to support the book. So. I don't want to use the last publisher for my last book that I used, just because, again, I feel like, you know, I should go with a Native, owned and operated, publisher. So it's pretty much done. It should be finalized by today. And, let's see. I would say we should be looking at the book to be ready. I'd say almost by Friday, it should be uploaded, as an ebook, and of course there'll be opportunities for folks to purchase the book as a hard copy book. I am having a publishing party coming up June 19th, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay.
My best friend from the Shinnecock Indian Nation, she has decided to throw me a birthday / publishing book publishing party, so I'm not really involved in
that. That sounds like fun.
I'll keep you all posted.
Okay. So you'll be signing autographs in the books and all that at that time?
I can. I don't mind doing that. If that's what folks want. If anyone wants an autograph signed copy of the book, no problem. You know, I don't mind to do that at all.
That's great. Well, I look forward to the new book, and I'm looking forward to working with you on projects in the future with all of the communities that are involved in helping one another here on the East Coast and throughout the Midwest. And I'm looking at probably bringing you back on the show here really soon. When maybe after your book release, maybe we can have another episode and break down some of the issues that are happening on the East Coast and with the non-federal tribes at the moment. Just kind of talk on some of the problems that are happening. Like I've been reading on Twitter again today, some different things that are being said about some of the issues with, the Pretendian list. And the different scholars that are for this list and for keeping non-federal tribes out of the table in Indian country. So I want to touch back on these issues because I know they're really, really important issues that many of us just like in the Midwest, many of the people don't know. The real issues that are happening on the East Coast and how these gatekeepers are able to do these things. And they're not seeing or hearing or listening or understanding any of this because it's not something happening in the communities that are here. You understand what I'm saying? So we're trying to get the mindset of the people to be on the same level. You know, you just have to put your feet in those shoes. You understand what I mean? And a lot of people are having a hard time doing that because they don't know exactly how, Walter Plecker and different, racial laws, took place because they were already here in Canada by that time. Do you see what I mean?
I do indeed, you know, and, again, like I say, whether federally recognized or not, you know, when it really comes down to it comes down to these families again. When you mess with families and you discredit families and you try to take away the life of families in the same way that our lives were taken before, I'm showing up. I don't care if you're federally recognized or not, you know, because it's about families and it's about people, you know, and it's about the lives of those people. So fed rec or non-fed rec, I'm still showing up, you know, and you're going to have my support even when you didn't support me. I'm still going to show up for you, you know, because of your story and because I know what happened to your people, you know,
mm-hmm.
because that's more important is that it's the survival of your people, you know. And even in my book, you know, I give acknowledgments to some of the tribes that have tried to discredit me and my tribe. I gave acknowledgement to them because even as a non-federally recognized tribe, I look at some of the frameworks in which they used as federally acknowledged tribes in the way that they mm-hmm. tried to serve their cultural frameworks and mechanisms, the different mechanisms and different bodies of agencies within their government systems. And I look at those and I say, okay, how do we shape this in a way that works for us without recognition? So I give them their props and their acknowledgement and their kudos because they have worked diligently. And that should not be discredited or it should not be not seen. You know, they have worked to preserve what they can in the capacity in which they did, whether they're doing it in a good way, whether they're doing it in a bad way. They're just simply trying to do what they can. And I acknowledge that in the acknowledgement section of the book. And you'll see that, you know. And again,
okay.
I've been where some of the folks are. And, you know, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some healing. But it's also going to take honesty. Going to take real honesty, real leadership. Not everyone has it. It's really a specialized gift that Creator gives to individual people. And some people are going to have it, some people are not. You know, but we still pray
mm-hmm. for exactly. Now, I'm just going to ask the audience, I typed in for our group here, do we have any questions for the speaker? If anyone has any questions right now and you're out listening on the radio or the telephone, go ahead and type them in the group to me, and I will ask the speaker if you have any questions. Bruce, did you have any questions or did you have any comments?
Sure, I got a comment. This is the second book that we're looking at, and, you know, a lot of this stuff is written for academics, and you know, I think one of the things we need to also look at is what are the books that our kids read? You know, are we able to make little storybooks that talk about our different histories that promote esteem in the kids that are 10 years old, that are 11 years old? And can we make books where we're educating our history instead of using the books of somebody else? And
or waiting till that they're at a level to read academic writing about our history. I think we need to bring it down to a little bit more simpler terms so that we can be able to teach it to our young. And like, I would love to be able to give my son that's 13 a book about your people, but I need something that is at his level to understand, right? And I would imagine I would want the same book for my own people that he would be able to read over and over and over again, you know, those types of things. So I'm hoping to try and go after some funding to see if we can't, because that was my area of expertise, was working in education and curriculum development. So if we can find some funding or maybe work with a publisher, you know, I have a publishing First Nations guy. He runs Menominee Books, and he just started out. So he just started publishing historical documents for, or historical books for authors. So I know he's working on our dictionary. So, but.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful, Bruce. That's wonderful. Yeah, you keep me in touch with him. You know, I'd love to check out what he's doing, especially if he's a guy who just first started out publishing. I'd love to talk to him. And then to talk a little bit about, you know, it's funny because I was just saying a few days ago, someone asked me, they said, well, what are you going to do next? And I was like, oh, I'm thinking about writing, you know, a book on insidious trauma, how trauma is inflicted insidiously in such a subtle way to Indigenous peoples. And then I said, I don't know, maybe I think I'll start writing children's books, Native children's books, to explain the core values of respect, love, generosity, you know, gratitude, et cetera, you know. So, I'd love to work with you on that, Bruce. We can get those books out, you know, so quickly, you know, and get them done and out to the people. I agree with you 100% on that. We have to meet people where they're at and being able to level up with everyone so that everyone gets a chance. Because it really starts with our children anyways. Adults, we're like, you know, our minds are kind of made up and we're set in our ways a little bit. But children, they have opportunities to grow. And it's our responsibility to help to guide them in that growth. So we can do it through children's books. I'm all in. I'm all in on that. We can get started right away.
Any questions from anybody?
No questions from anyone. So
if there's any questions of like opposition too, you know, I'm more than welcome to answer those as well. So you don't have to screen those. I'm willing to because it's a healing process for everybody when we're able to deal with those kind of things. So if there's anything that looks, you know, maybe negative or something like that, I'm willing to answer those too.
Yeah, Bruce was saying no one really, you know.
Not yet, anyway.
No. But my last comment that I'm sure that it's going to happen because, you know, I've tweeted out our podcast link to some different people. So, but my last comment, and we're talking about the children because Bruce and I worked on some curriculum planning for the kids. Right. It was curriculum, for what grades, hon? For babies. And then we did the youth as well, right? Youth and adults. We did all three. And so we have some things that we can use for, you know, everybody that is going to share and help one another here. And we need to start getting organized to the point of being able to, you know, visit each other's communities. You know, we're taking COVID-19 into consideration here, but I'm looking at the internet, using the platform just to do small little sessions, even if we do songs for the kids. At a certain age group at, you know, twice a week at 11:30, we're going to do songs together and we bring in 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 or 15, how many different families we have that is interested to have little children at a certain age group that can participate. You understand what I mean? So, we could have a teacher sing some songs with the kids, even sing, tell stories. We can do all sorts of things. And I have, you know, like Bruce said, like online schooling, cultural Yeah, and Bruce said all the schools are going online, and we can do some things like this online for the children with homeschooling culturally. So that's something we can do. If someone's interested in getting together with me on that, and it'll be similar if you were in our language courses, it'll be similar to something like that on a platform that'll be a lot easier to log into and everything like that as well. And I will buy the space. I will buy the space so we can have the families on there and give them the classes and whatnot. But I think it's something that we need to start right away. Yes, and I have three grandchildren in the United States, and I have one granddaughter here. And my three grandchildren in the United States, the oldest daughter, we did a ceremony for with another child in the big house. And it was a welcoming ceremony, a baby welcoming ceremony. And they exchanged gifts and all sorts of things. But the main aspect of having this ceremony was having the young families there with the children, the young families in their 20s that are coming to ceremony, and we are reinforcing our responsibilities and roles with the families and letting them know, you need help with something, we're going to be there for you. We're letting them know when we told them that we were going to be there for them. There's family troubles going on, call us. You know, you need help with a bill, you're struggling financially, please call us. Let us know, because we're trying to help prop up the families, the indigenous families here that want to take part in ceremony, that believe in culture. So, you know, and this is what we have to do. This is something that the Creator wants us to do. And Bruce and I, we do it. We make it happen. And it's because we want to see the future of our people in a better position than when we were at a younger age, when we were looking and trying to understand ourselves and things like that, because each person has to go through their own understanding of who they are and knowledge of self, because you don't get that, you're going to have a hard time connecting the dots with everything else in life. So that was my last comment. I hope to work with you in the future. Bruce and I both, we want to work with you in the future. We know that you are ready to take on those roles and responsibilities that you outlined at the beginning of the show. And we're on the same path as you, except for we're doing things in different ways and you're doing things in different ways, and you can teach us things and we can teach you some things and we can share knowledge. You know, this is what we have to do for the survival of our people into the future. We have to think about the future. If we don't think about the future, what are we doing? We're just thinking about ourselves. So
that's right.
I want to thank you.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I want to thank you.
Just really quickly, too, before we get going, I just wanted to mention, you know, for those that are listening, you know, I want to say, and for those tribal leaders that are listening that don't have much of a voice, or that may feel in some way that you're not being recognized or acknowledged for your efforts, you know, I just want to say to you, from me, definitely, all of your efforts are being acknowledged, even if I don't necessarily communicate with you all the time. Mm-hmm. I want you to know, if you're listening, or if you end up listening to this podcast, that I see all of the work that you all are doing, and it's special, and it's sacred work, you know, and, there's not one of you all that have ever been able to say something to me or do something to me that, you know, may have tried to discredit me, that will make me feel bad enough to not still turn around and acknowledge your efforts. There's nothing that you could do to allow for me not to really acknowledge your special efforts and what you do for your people. And I just want to say that with honesty, you know, and that's true. You know, that's true, because I know what it takes. I know what it feels like. I know how hard it is. I know how
it's hard.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that.
And there's a lot of people that are going to listen to this podcast that may have a little negativity towards it and things like that. And then there's going to be so many that are going to be young, and they're going to hear it and they're going to say, you know, something about it sparked an interest in their heart and opens up their mind to see more about who they are as Indigenous peoples. And I'm hoping, this is my hope, that this will happen for some of our youth. You know, the ones that are in their 20s or 30s that are just, they're just looking at who they are. You understand what I mean? And they've may have been disconnected for many years and things like that. So this will help them feel empowered to be able to pick up the pieces and help and give back. Did you have anything else, Bruce, to say? Did you want to do a prayer at the end, brother, in your language?
Yeah, I can say a quick prayer. That's fine. There's no problem.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead and close out?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, thank you for having me. Tabatne wuche akia kesikak. Tabatne wuche nipi kwaza kwazash. Tabatne wuche medakam kesikak. Katanik tabatne katanik. Thank you.
You too.
Anushik. Okay, guys, I want to thank you all for joining us here on Native Voices United Radio. You know, give this podcast to your friends. Give them our link. We're here for you guys. We want you to know that, and we love you very much. Anushik, for joining us here live on Native Voices United Radio. Good night.